Hey everyone, welcome to another great episode of Content and Conversation. Today I'm excited to be joined by President and CEO David Palumbo of the Launch That Company. They're kind of under the radar, but doing amazing things in the legal and finance space. I have a lot of respect for the great work David and his team are doing. Specifically, they're working on brands like Asbestos, Annuity.org, Retire Guide, and Drug Watch, which are some of the most competitive industries on the web. So we're super excited to have David on to talk through SEO and link building and all the great things they're doing at Launch That. So thanks for coming on, David.
Thank you, Ross. And I'm excited to be here. I still remember, Ross, the first time I think I met you was at kind of a MozCon many years ago, and a lot of interesting conversations after sessions and all of that, and have always kind of respected you from afar. And, you know, it's awesome things that you've been building over there at Siege. And it's been cool to see it all grow. So very cool.
Yeah, appreciate that. And ditto to you all, for people who are not aware, as I kind of touched on, you guys fly under the radar, but doing big things. And it's like even more impressive, which is a decent segue. It's even more impressive the kind of spaces you're doing this in. So for people who kind of didn't pick up on the like brush over I did on the intro, you're in like some of the most competitive, like expertise, authority, trust type spaces, the Asbestos, the Drug Watch kind of spaces in the world. And content creation there and volatility is like part of the game, as far as I hear. Some stressful nights for some companies. I think you all have gotten a little less stressed because you're doing such a great job with content creation and all that within those spaces. So curious, like starting there, how are you doing content creation? How do you think about that in these kind of very competitive kind of industries?
Yeah. So, I mean, for us, you know, content creation is, it's such a huge part of everything that we do. And when it comes to kind of those types of principles, like EAT, all of that, it forms a huge part of our strategy and our brands, and it aligns with everything that we're trying to do. You know, we constantly are developing relationships with experts. We're constantly improving the authority of the content that we develop, making sure that users know that this is being developed in a trusted way. We're hiring people who are true researchers, journalists, all of those types of skill sets, and making sure that they have a voice within the company. You know, we don't really treat content as something that is serving SEO. We kind of have those departments laterally. And so, yes, we always have goals in terms of what we're trying to do, in terms of our performance, how many customers we're trying to generate, all of that. But we make sure that those content teams have a voice in the creation of everything that we create. And we have been super invested in making sure that users know that if we're going to write about complex, difficult topics around health, around legal issues, around financial issues, that we're going to invest the time to make sure that people know that this is information that they can trust and try to present it in a way that they can understand it. Because that's the other thing, is these topics are complex. So they take time to really understand, wrap your head around, and be able to communicate it to a user in a way where they start to feel confident, oh, I can make a decision on something that in many cases can be a life-changing decision. So we respect kind of the information that we're going to put on the site. And when it comes to content creation, we are always trying to not kind of overstretch ourselves. If we're going to write about a topic, we know that we have to maintain it. I mean, these are competitive keywords, and things change in all of these specific topics. So we're not just going to create a massive list of here's 1,000 how-to pages on this specific content piece, because that's not serving our users. We'd rather have a smaller base of content that we know is really well researched, really authoritative, you know, backed by experts, and we know that we can maintain it.
On that point, and you kind of touched on it, you're not in a rush to finish these posts. You're not doing a huge volume of articles. You're doing a smaller amount really, really well. And it, as part of that, one of the things I've ran into, I used to own a website that we did use internally. And one of the first versions of it, I kind of got into issues with, is that I was just like, let's do what's right for this article, and didn't necessarily do my best job of like defining. You still needed to have some kind of publishing goal that we stuck to for those people. And sometimes we get like 1 to 2 articles published a month, and sometimes that made sense, but neither here nor there. What I'm getting at is, how do you walk that line of pushing for quality content, but still creating metrics just to make sure success is measured, and balancing those two goals?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a really good question. And it's something that we're always striving to improve. Like, we have constant communication and measurement that's happening within the organization to make sure that we're moving efficiently and that we are creating pages at a good pace. And we do things like benchmarking, and we track how long it takes to create some of these things. And that can give us some historical context, but it's just not always, it's not always going to fit into kind of a clean bucket. Things that do help is making sure that the stakeholders are involved early. They describe what's needed. The quality standards are very, very clear. You know, the types of things that we would create up front, things like page tables that would really kind of inform the writer of what we're looking for and how in depth that they need to get into the topic itself, what kind of page it ultimately is from a research perspective. All of these aspects are critical to basically determining how long and how much you can create over time. And there are big differences between certain types of pages. There may be more pages where you're creating out a section and you need 10 of these template pages to support this one hub. And then there's going to be this big feature that you're going to promote that is part of kind of that whole content hub. Each of those different things that I just described takes a different amount of time. And you have to be pretty clear about what your expectations are and what your goals are with each page. But the number of pages that we create is not typically a goal at the company. It's, you know, we're more serving the higher level goals of the performance of the asset and the website itself.
Do you break down, like within your teams, are people owning like parts of the website or certain pages, and they're kind of like in some ways measured on that, like the rankings of 3, 10 pages or what have you?
In certain situations, you know, we will have build outs, and there will be a stakeholder for a bigger project, and they may be the person that is kind of more responsible for the performance of that area. But it is almost as it over time, it all kind of funnels up to the kind of what we call kind of the project lead. And, you know, them kind of making sure that the performance of the whole asset is performing. But we do let team members own specific pieces over time. And that's a big part of what we do here and how we grow people. So, yeah, there are that does happen.
Nice. So you touched on it off my first question, but something I'm personally interested in process wise. You have medical experts. You talked about hiring them and having them review your content. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing there is a mix of that internal and external, mm-hmm. Where that happens. Like, what is your process for like finding these experts, compensating them to the degree you're comfortable talking about? Like, would love to hear specific to those kind of niche, difficult industries where these people are busy. How do you get them on board and helping you?
You know, a big part of what our content teams are doing is creating and crafting relationships with experts. And you can't really fake it. There's really you have to know what you're talking about to talk to somebody on the other side to respect you in an industry that is complex, like a legal space or a health space or a financial space. So we pride ourselves on knowing that the people who are writing the content can actually speak well enough on those topics and are well-versed enough to actually interact with an expert. And so that, I would say that's kind of the basis of everything right from the start. In terms of who do we interact with and what kind of experts we seek out, it really depends. You know, we are always trying to serve the user. So if the page is about a specific topic that is, let's say it's cancer related, then we are going to want to speak to an oncologist. We're not going to want to talk to a general practitioner doctor. We're going to want to talk to an oncologist, and even more specifically, an oncologist or a surgeon who specializes in the issue that we're describing. And so that goal also makes it easier for the expert to just kind of say yes, because they're reading a page about stuff that they already know and they know well. They don't act that, you know, they'll be able to review it quickly. They don't have to switch gears and kind of, oh, I don't know this stuff. So it becomes easier for them. And then, you know, the credibility for them too, you know, knowing that they're attached to an authoritative digital brand that sees lots of users every single year. That also is something that they're looking for. And that it kind of has kind of that flywheel aspect where you are an authority, you do have that. Well, then the expert is going to be more likely to kind of get on board and say, actually, yeah, I do trust this information. You sent me a good page of information. Here's three or four review edits. And, you know, here's things that we could add. And they feel confident. Oh, yeah, I can attach my name to this page.
Love that insight. It's kind of like you're trying to pursue EAT, and on the way there, you have to have EAT yourself to get the expert to want to attach their name to you. And that probably is a rub that many of these sites get into, is they will like try to find a random doctor, probably could even do what you did, like, or you mentioned, not the right type of doctor. That immediately to you would be a red flag and probably someone who actually has these issues. But love that of like, really you have to build expertise to get those experts on board in a way to then signal more expertise to the end user. So it's kind of a cyclical thing that you have to build towards that you can't fake. This is real thing, real shit going on effectively.
Yeah. I mean, I think you have to do that. I think that there may be ways that people are misinterpreting EAT as something that is probably a signal that they can just easily manipulate game, and they can see some of these more authoritative brands and they can say, oh, I'll just take their template and then I'll just add some stuff on there. I'm not sure that that's ultimately going to get you what you're actually searching for, especially at this time when the algorithm is much more complex and there is many more factors at work. I don't think that approach is probably I think people who are probably executing in that way are probably wasting their time.
Agreed. I'm seeing the same where it's effectively authenticity. And in some ways, there might be ways to emphasize your authenticity a little more clearly to the end user. And that might be the difference, is you still need the authenticity at the core. And it's a lot of people trying to fake that are losing to people like you
yeah. right now.
So you've got a great link building team there as well. I mean, you definitely benefit from the great content you've got on the sites for sure. But it seems like you've built a good process over time to generate quality links from these relationships you've built and things like that. From people have heard link building tips and things like that, but as a person who's building teams, curious how you motivate link builders. Like, are there any incentive structures you have set up? Like, would love to hear those kinds of things.
Yeah. So that's like a hard shift, switching gears here. But it's an easy shift for me, because I started in this industry as a link builder. And so, in terms of the things that our company has always had, link building as a core competency at its core. And we have always incentivized link builders through different competitions. We know generally what is a good link, and we try to create systems that promote that. A large part of that is we create kind of point systems where a link is worth a number of points depending on different qualities that that link may have. And a lot of those principles are probably pretty obvious in terms of, you know, if they're more authoritative domains, you know, if they come from, if they're in kind of the main content of a page, if it's more of a branded link or a link to a targeted page that you're trying to get more kind of links towards, all of these types of things. And so that has always been a way to kind of motivate the team to find processes to generate better links. And so that's more on kind of the outreach side. But there's also at, you know, a certain level, you know, what ends up happening is when your domain is very authoritative and it's trusted and all of that, really kind of the passive links that you're generating and the links from, you know, content marketing strategies, all those types of things, that kind of ends up providing even more value or surpassing maybe what general outreach is doing. But I think both are still kind of main aspects of how domains are performing in search. And you kind of want to have an understanding of both. There, I think that there are brands, especially more kind of real world, doing a lot of traditional advertising, brick and mortar brands, all that kind of stuff, that probably needs almost none of kind of general outreach. Although I would still say that there are some real good opportunities, especially for PR type stuff in that area. But I still think that most domains are probably having a mix of both, will lead to kind of the best results.
Yeah, it makes sense. I think you're aware of we've been kind of going the passive link route. I think in some of your industries, and one of the equations we like to do is like, what is the value per link? And if you look at the traffic value divided by the number of linking root domains or the winning sites, it's often an indication of just how hard it is to generate a link. And that often connects to the fact that there might not be search volume associated with many of the top funnel topics that mean you got to like grind that out. And sometimes the value of manual is higher. I think a few of your sites for sure qualify in that space where it could still be a positive supplement. But those are great motivators. Do you do anything on the content side out of curiosity of just like the people creating the content from a motivation standpoint?
From the content side, when you mentioned the motivational standpoint, are you speaking maybe something that's more like competition or monetary driven?
Yeah, potentially rankings,
yeah,
or
yeah. No, not necessarily. We, you know, if you look at sort of some of our projects, we really do believe that people from different skill sets can learn kind of higher levels of the process. So for example, we might have a developer, a designer, a content person, and a marketer all working together on a project. And that's common here. You could have the main stakeholder be the developer or be the content writer. And if they're the ones who are kind of executing that project, as long as they have enough of an understanding of how that process is going to work, they can be accountable for maybe what goal they had kind of set for that project. And yeah, we might have a discretionary bonus or something from like that, but we like to make sure that the different skill sets have the opportunity to basically have that perspective and learn kind of those pieces. But we don't have, I wouldn't say that we generally have sort of that monetary incentive that like the outreach folks have, which is kind of looks a little bit more like a traditional sales role.
Yeah, that makes sense. And we played with that when we were doing more manual link building. And it makes sense. I think it does make sense in a more sales traditional role, and agree, like on the content side, I think hopefully give people a good base compensation and they're motivated by that. And some of it's intrinsic of doing good work. And it's kind of the Netflix model, I believe, if you've read their books, of pay well. And sometimes bonuses are not as needed on those kinds of roles. But yeah, not transitioning completely, but a unique link building element I saw on one of your websites is you have because these are like authoritative websites, and these are authoritative feeling articles, always when I'm looking at them, you actually give the context of, if you're citing a research paper, this is how you would do that. So it's kind of like a thing for people who can't see this. On your site Annuity, there's a cite us section above the fold. You click it, it has a pop-up, and it gives you how to cite Annuity in like some traditional research paper type format. So curious what kind of success you're seeing with that, or how that's going for you, if there's anything else to touch on with that strategy.
We launched that probably early in the year. And the hypothesis was like, yes, we would get more passive link mentions if we can scale this across our site and make sure that people know, hey, you know, this is something, you know, kind of giving the indication like, yeah, this is something worth citing, and this is something that you can easily cite. And when after launch, we have been tracking, you know, I reached out to the team, and we've received about 30% more passive link mentions over the last 3 to 4 months versus the 3 to 4 months previously. And, you know, some of that might just be kind of variance, or the domain is growing itself, but it's very, very hard to isolate some of these types of efforts. And in reality, we're not trying to. I mean, this isn't something that I would say, hey, this is worth isolating and trying to measure. This is just, you know, we're working through the principles of what we're trying to create with our brands. And we know that as long as we stick to kind of our mission and what we're trying to develop, like, we will be able to continue to progress and improve. And this is one of those features that we think just makes the site more authoritative, makes it easier for people to cite us and get some of those off-page passive mentions.
Yeah, and it makes sense, even to your point of, even if the passive mentions aren't the goal, it's just yet another signal of authoritativeness that's communicated to the people reading the article. And I think this goes back to a theme that we touched on earlier, that don't everybody who's listening to this go implement this. If you're like faking your eat signals, like, no one's going to cite you. You have to give off the feeling that you truly are citable, then maybe this incrementally could help. And your sites do this. But if you don't have that, this is just wasted time, probably. Maybe you should have focused it on improving your site instead. I don't know if you'd agree with that take.
No, I definitely would agree with that take. And definitely this is a feature that only works once you reach a critical mass of users, right? You know, the fact that we're ranking for head terms, that people are you know, finding these kind of high-end financial topics and they're finding our website, you know, there is a good chance that that is somebody doing some level of research or trying to understand something that they read on Forbes or something like that, that now that feature is going to reach that person. But if you're trying to rank, you might not have the sufficient number of users for this to even have any sort of lift, considering that nobody might even be there to use that.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's kind of like a rich gets richer flywheel reference.
It probably has a little bit of that impact, I'm sure.
That makes sense. So you have a lot of these health sites, like among the other things that I like on your a few of your websites is you, and many people are probably familiar with this, but you have a "Do you find this helpful?" kind of upvote, downvote thing at the end of articles. Mm-hmm. And I've seen this on other websites. Curious how you like use this in practice. You have like a dashboard that people see, like in your mm-hmm. act, that's a signal when something hits the threshold either way. Yeah. Curious how you're thinking about that feature.
Yeah. I mean, it's an API that shoots straight into a Google sheet and, you know, the team can see it. And, sometimes there's stuff in there where immediately it's like, you know, a user found something wrong, you know, or they found an error or something. We'll fix it. You know, that is probably an easy one. Sometimes, it's just general positive feedback. And the interesting thing is that when you're doing good research and you're compiling a complex topic, well, and somebody who's been, I don't know, maybe a financial advisor for 15 years, reads your page and says, actually, this is a good page. I can give this to people that I work with. And they say, hey, great job. Well, that's one of the easiest ways for us to know, oh, this is a signal. This is a potential relationship. Let me reach out to this person. And, you know, let's see if they want to review pages or if they have different ideas for things that we can use to expand the content. So you're kind of creating the digital brand from that aspect. And I think the only way that you do that is you continually make it top of mind for your content developers to know, like, hey, like actually crafting these relationships with these experts is part of the goal. That's part of growing out the brand. That's part of growing out everything that we're developing. So there is that aspect. There is also an aspect where you can do a level of sort of review harvesting where, oh, this person likes the things that we're developing. Well, you know, great feedback. Could you leave us a review on an off-party website or something like that? Those are all things that I think are things that come into play.
So I don't know. Do you ask for their email after they kind of trigger the up or down, or how do you know who has kind of done that on those features?
I'm not sure if they ask, but there's typically some sort of optional sort of entry point.
Actually, as you search that, I do see you have a few different functions of how you do this. And one of them was kind of a three-step where you very elegantly progress them through simple yes, no's, and then ask, what did you like about the article and your information if you're willing to share it?
Yep.
So that seems like the obvious kind of segue, and I dig that. And also, like we were talking about motivation, I can see how in the world of SEO and content marketing, it's great. You get the signal of your website increasing in traffic, but to actually get real human data that says, I liked your article, that's got to be pretty motivating. That unfortunately, most of the time in the SEO world, you don't get. You see the traffic increase, and generally that's an indication, but not as many signals on the dot.
Yeah, that's the type of stuff from a cultural perspective we try to make sure that we share frequently, because it's easy to get lost in sort of the data points and pull up Google Analytics and say, oh, 15,000 people were here yesterday or whatever, and then not kind of actually understand, hey, actually this person loved this information, or this helped them with this, or this, you know, this provided help in this type of difficult situation. So when we get that feedback, we make sure to share it across the team, because it has to be something. It's one of those things where everybody kind of gets invested into making sure that the brand is improving and gets invested into the things that we do.
Nice. Is it like, you mentioned going into a spreadsheet. I was curious if you like dropping it. I could see a feed into Slack or something like that, but as well. But maybe you wouldn't want thumbs down if they very sporadically happen.
No, I mean, it's pretty transparent. So I think even if they leave bad feedback, people can see it. I mean, it's an open Google sheet, so people can just go in there. So I don't think there's a feed that just shoots into Slack right now, although we could build it, Ross. So I could see that. But I will tell you that the comments that are sort of like, oh, hey, this is, you know, great, help me with this situation, all this kind of stuff. Yeah, that stuff we put into Slack, you know, the team sees it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Dig that. Yeah. Another thing in kind of your feature set that I liked in that's unique to you, or I see it more rarely is your like cited research articles. You can kind of like jump very often. You can even jump to what citations are being referenced. You have it kind of nicely fades out. So you can like pull that out if you want to, but you don't have to have it if you don't, in terms of cluttering up the site and probably pulling from calls to action and things like that. But, yeah. Have you seen, I'm guessing you've seen benefit from this, but how has this gone in particular? How'd you end up leaning towards this? How would you talk to this feature on your sites?
Well, this is a feature that, again, it probably falls in that bucket, hard to measure. We don't know its overall impact, but it aligns with what we're trying to convey to the user, which is if you look at kind of our cited research articles, you will see a lot of authoritative pieces of information. You'll see how we actually created this page of content. So it really does provide a guide of here's the stuff that we actually research and we take into account. And we have a blurb there that kind of lets you know, hey, what do we look at? We look at government information. We look at reputable nonprofits. We look at, you know, experts within the industry. We are taking all of this into account. Here's our editorial guidelines. Here's how we do our research. And for somebody that is trying to make sure that this is reputable, I think that this is very much kind of makes it very clear, like, hey, here's all the work that goes into this page. And for us, it is an accurate representation of the effort that gets put into the page. So we want to make sure that users have that and they know that. And so I think that it starts there for us. Any of its kind of SEO impact or anything like that for us is just secondary. And I can't really tell you with any confidence, like, oh, this is having an impact on what we do. It's just, no, here's actually how we produce this content. We're being open with you. Here's what we did to actually produce it. And, you know, here's how we're creating this page.
So you made me think about one of the things you touched on earlier. You mentioned your teams, I believe, are kind of like horizontal, where there's SEO and then a writer, and the writer is like thinking user first and is kind of getting direction from the SEO. Could you expand on that a little bit more? Like, how do you get? Yeah, how does that work?
Yeah, so within the units, you know, we'll have a content unit, a marketing unit, and a kind of technology development unit. And they're all kind of working with each other, serving kind of a project lead that oversees the vision of sort of the project itself. And those skill sets we consider pretty much lateral. So we try to make sure that, yes, an SEO's perspective is super important, needs to be taken into account. So is a writer's perspective, you know, and what is sort of what they need to get to accomplish their goals and produce some of the content that we're talking about that's authoritative, well-researched, all of those pieces. And then the same thing on the technology side, you know, to develop an asset, you know, what needs to be taken into account. So they work kind of alongside each other. And like I mentioned before, I would say in general, marketers kind of take a little bit more of the lead more often, but not always. And we try to make sure that people kind of know that in each part of the process, if you can look at the higher level project goals and tie your skill set and what you're trying to provide and work across those other skill sets, that you can also take over an initiative, a larger level initiative, and work across the unit.
Okay, so that creates some incentives to hopefully push on quality and not just be like, we need to include this subheader that says what is X or what have you.
Yeah. And we have, I would say in general, that has always been something that we've been making sure doesn't happen. And I, you know, if you go back to the beginning of this conversation where you talked about why we spend so much time on content and all of that, I think we spend an appropriate amount of time on content. I'm speaking almost as in relation to a lot of these other SEO type companies that I see, and I see their process and the assets that they're creating. And I know that they are outsourcing or pushing these sorts of content groups and just giving them, you know, Excel files with 1,000 URLs and a whole bunch of headers and just saying, create all of this. And I'm just telling you, we don't do that. And then that's not anybody's job here to do. And we make sure that that's as far away from what we're trying to create as possible.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, it makes sense that you can, that creates qualitative incentives as compared to going back to the keyword. You have to find ways for them to work together, but it makes sense. And I can see how it's created the great infrastructure that you have there. Curious, like a lot of these sites do, you have qualitative things that are, some sites share them. Do you, on like an article level, are you giving people, maybe this, I'm going to answer my own question, but do you have like, you need, every article needs to be edited by two people, needs to have X research articles. Do you give writers that kind of process framework, or how does that work at Launch That?
It's probably something that one of my content leads can answer way better than I can. But typically, I think that there are loose guides, right? So I think for a specific type of page, there's going to be a loose guide of, hey, make sure to do this amount of research. Let's make sure to have this level of headings. Just because if it's more of sort of, this is generally how this works, and then we try to make sure that the dialogue is open enough. So if a writer really is like, actually, I can't get it done within this framework, then hopefully they know that they can kind of bring that up and then we can maybe expand it. But I think that there are typical guidelines depending on what level of page it is and what type of page it is. But I'm not sure it's as hard of a number of, you have to have 10 research articles, you have to interview 3 experts, and you have to, you know, write 3 headings. It probably looks more like, and here's me theorizing about how we actually do work. It probably looks more like, hey, there's probably 5 to 7 headings, you know, do 7 to 15 papers, you know, maybe try to find 1 or 2 experts, and that's how this page gets created.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, I think that's good. There's definitely, we found like you give process, you give too much process and people are afraid to break it. Then you've end up with articles that read like every single SEO article that you've seen. You got to have like the confidence, and also culturally, yeah, they can't be afraid to kind of like break the rules to be able to come up with the best piece of content there is. So this has been great, David. As we wrap this up, wondering like what is Launch That excited about right now, whether it's search, content marketing, anything you're working on in particular that's interesting to you, like what kind of would you leave people with there?
I mean, you know, at Launch That, I mean, we're always excited to kind of grow our projects, and you know, we're super invested into our brands, and we really believe that, you know, everything that we're doing is kind of helping people and we're building things right. And I think that for us, you know, one of the cool things is that owning and operating these brands, you get to work on things that you continually improve and you get to see them grow and mature and continue to grow. So I think always that's kind of a huge part of everything that we do. As we kind of expand, you know, typically we try to launch another kind of big brand in the space. And I wouldn't be surprised if we don't launch one within the next 6 to 12 months. And that'll be another kind of great effort for us. And we'll be excited to kind of get into that. So those are that is always kind of an exciting piece for us. And that's always something that we're looking forward to.
Nice. Yeah, David, this has been great. I mean, I should restate, like, in some ways in my mental framework, you look at, I like default to companies like a NerdWallet or something like that. For there's people that are obvious and you look at them because they show up on the most obvious queries. I think really good SEO and content marketing sometimes is you pay attention to the people that are doing best in class stuff and like continually pushing the needle. And I think your company is clearly doing that. And hopefully not competitors tracking this, but in terms of the quality of the stuff you guys are doing, I think that's something people should pay attention to. So appreciate you coming on and sharing your wisdom with our audience.
Thank you, Ross. And I do want to make sure that people know I can't do this interview with you without a lot of expert people at this company. And, you know, they're the ones who are doing a lot of this great work and creating a lot of the things that you had actually brought up to me today. So I definitely want to give out a shout out to some of the marketers and content developers here. Really awesome team here at LaunchThat, and they've actually been able to help me do this interview. So I want to make sure that people know that.
Nice. That's good leadership, David, and another reason why LaunchThat's doing good things. So thank you for coming on. Check out LaunchThat. Go to their website. You can learn more about their brands. I'm sure they're hiring. You're hiring just in Orlando or everywhere? Or what's your kind of?
Typically everywhere, but you know, we do have a hybrid workspace. We do have some remote roles. I mean, it's a changing landscape. We do have an awesome hybrid kind of culture. So typically, if you are in Orlando, definitely apply. If you're remote, there's also roles out there. So yeah, you can still apply. So
awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, David. Thanks for coming on.
Yep. Thank you, Ross. It was awesome.
If you like this episode of Content Conversation, subscribe for more great content coming soon. Depending on your platform of choice, we'd appreciate any and all likes, loves, and reviews. Thank you for listening.